On the line from England, we have Tanika Renar. How are you?
I'm just fine, thank you.
I am very, very interested in your journey home. This is a new book, right?
Yes, it is, and it's a culmination of experiences that happened to me during a spiritual awakening.
I want to get into this in a minute completely. But first of all, you're going to be here in the States, in California, in the San Francisco area, right?
That's right, yes.
And that'll be on Saturday the 29th of April.
That's right, yep.
And basically, we'll get into more of that here as well. It's a New Living Expos. And I understand you speak at 11 o'clock that morning.
That's right, Jerry, yep. It's going to be on Angels, Archangels, and the Human Soul.
And tell me a little bit about when you make these presentations. Do you use different things like slides and things like that to show?
Oh my goodness, no! I probably think it's because I'm quite a colorful character.
Well, I've heard that about you, but I didn't want to bring it up. We just met.
I tell you, when I talk, especially at the lectures, the aim is to get the audience into my world so they can see exactly where I'm coming from. So everybody gets what I'm talking about. I use lots of analogies, and I talk pretty much on everyone's level. And I scan the audience so I can see who's taking it in and who isn't. Now, there's never any need for slides or I never worked.
So this is a really hands-on experience between you and your audience.
It is. So every talk is pretty much different. It does depend on the audience.
Uh-huh. Tanika is, you're an extraordinary psychic from, everything I've heard about you. I've seen you build as a visionary as well. Tell me about that.
Well, that's kind of the description that other folks give me. They tend to, that's what other folks give me. But what I'm able to do is, I think, I'm a very ordinary person, but I think what I tend to represent is the possible potential that mankind has. I can travel into dimensions, into many different dimensions. I've been into the astral realms, the heavens, the afterlife, to see what goes on there, to see what actually happens when we die, how many levels there are, all those type of things. I'm able to talk with absolutely anything in creation. Well, everything in creation has a consciousness. Everything that is created has a consciousness. And I'm able to communicate with that consciousness, including disease. Disease has a consciousness.
So we're just not talking about living objects themselves, but you're talking about literally like if you have cancer or multiple sclerosis or something.
Absolutely. I'm treating cancer a lot here in England at the moment, and very successfully. And I've actually, by actually talking with the energy that is cancer, you can then determine why it's here, what it's doing, and then work more in harmony with the physical body so the cancer doesn't have to be there.
Well, I know you have 17 years of clinical experience working with people suffering from illnesses and injuries and things like that. How does the medical profession view you?
Well, because the medical profession actually sends me patients, but they send me patients as a last resort. It's not something that is actually recognized yet because over here we have the NHS, the National Health Service. And the doctors and the consultants here are pretty much dictated by the pharmaceutical companies that govern the NHS. But what happens is the patients go back to the medical profession because it really is word of mouth. And they report what's happened in the clinic that we have here in the UK. And the medical profession has just stunned as to how simple the techniques I use are and the profound effect they have. But there does seem to be a level of, I'd probably say if they don't understand that to treat any disease, you need to take, you need to take a very simple approach rather than a technical approach. Because it does seem that what's happening is that the medical profession has kind of lost the touch that the human body is a living organism. Therefore, it does respond to energy as opposed to chemicals. And I do treat the body literally as it is. It's a living organism. And I do educate the patients to look at it that way as well. For example, with the cancer, I do tell the patients, look, all cancer is a weed in the garden. And what you have to do is you have to stop giving that weed what it needs to grow. And what happens, especially with tumours in the cancer, is that the tumour creates its own blood supply. So what you then have to do is find out how to starve the tumour of that blood supply, which is what I do. It doesn't have any effect on the rest of the physical body, but you starve the tumour of that blood supply and it gradually dies off. It's a bit like, you know, when ivy climbs up a tree and the ivy will slowly kill the tree. You cut the ivy off at source and gradually the ivy will fall off the tree. And it really is as simple as that. And I always say to patients, but don't get into a battle, don't do I'm going to fight cancer, because if you get into a fight, there's always a winner and a loser. But if you just understand what the cancer is, then you can work with it and you can just take away what feeds it. And I also get them to get their blood to run alkaline as opposed to acid, because most folks in the West tend to have a blood system that runs more acid, which disease does love living it. So I get to run more acid, and that's really pretty much with dietary.
When you found out that you had this ability, you must have been very young.
It was, I'm nearly 50 now, Jerry, and
Well, you look pretty good for that age.
Yeah, so I'm tired. And I've got four children, so
that's okay. I'm older than you. In fact, I'm older than everyone on the earth. But that
got a few years under your belt, then. Yeah. Well, when it first happened, when I first pretty much stopped fighting in myself and allowed myself to fulfill whatever my destiny was, I still don't know what it was. But just stepping to the non-fighting. That's a bit of a story. I felt that the only way I can describe it is that possibly the universe or creation or God, whatever one determines that great force that lives within everyone and everything, I thought they kind of got this wrong, because I could do all this thing and I thought, but look, I'm an ordinary person, I'm a mum, I have, I don't live a holier than thou life. Why is it I can do all these things? And I really did think I was going mad. So I took myself off to see a fair few parapsychologists who they said that I was the most psychic person they had ever met. I don't really like the word psychic, you know, Jerry. I tend to call myself awake. I tend to tell everybody that I'm awake and probably more awake than most people. And that's why I can do these things.
Now you called this book Journey Home for a reason.
Yeah, it's a journey home back to the self that we have forgotten, our self that we have forgotten. It's actually called Journey Home, a true story of time and interdimension.
Uh-huh.
Because to actually journey back home, one then explores all these different dimensions that exist in and around us. But it's not just exploring those different dimensions, it's understanding as well how different thought forms and social conditioning and different religions and different ways of living have actually restricted our own integrity and discernment, that we can actually begin to be whole beings and live life fully and in an abundantly as God's creation, the universe, would have us do that.
You know, in the conversation, we've already alluded to religion a couple of times. You said you've been, I guess the term would be to the other side. You visited life after death, is that right?
That's right, yes.
Have you come face to face with God or whatever the.
Well, now there's the big question. What actually happened, and this is all explained actually in the book, so briefly, how I now see God, because obviously this has been a long journey, I see God now as this fantastic energy that does live inside everyone and everything. And then from this fantastic energy, you have the envoys, which we call archangels, or the many different spirits or deities that are in many different religions. And then you have one's individual angel or angelic self. But the whole essence that is God, it's pretty much how the, as I've seen it, and this is how I've grown today, it's pretty much how the Chinese, what the Chinese call the qi energy, what Muslims call Allah, what the Christians call God, it's pretty much the same thing. But it's this energy, this ultimate energy that lives in every single living thing. And therefore, because it is a fantastic energy, it doesn't judge. It either has balance or it has imbalance.
So basically you're talking about, I guess, may the force be with you type thing.
Yeah, it pretty much is it. And when you can tap into that force, my great eureka came when I was sitting on a swing and I was pondering as to, I'd had a letter of a big rejection from my stepmother, and it was kind of when I was in my 40s that I got to realize that she actually really didn't love me. It took me a long time to realize that, you know, didn't go on the uptake. And I was really, really hurt, really devastated. And I was sitting there, and the previous night I watched the program with the Shaolin monks, you know how they balance on the thoughts, and they use this qi energy. And I was out thinking, I always wondered, as many folks do, what actually is God? And that was really my big question, what actually is God? And I was sitting on this swing, and it was a gentle swing, swinging away, and I wasn't actually swinging, it was just like rock, rock, rock. And I went into this deep thought, and I thought, I wonder if the God force, or God, or creation, is the same as the Chinese, or the Shaolin monks call the qi energy. And then as I'm thinking that, I'm also thinking, I wonder if that is the case, if it feels so rejected, like I feel rejected now from what my stepmother has said. I wonder if it feels this much pain when we, as conscious human beings, reject that force. Does it feel like I feel now? Anyway, what then happened was, the swing started to move as if like I was being pushed, although you couldn't feel any hands or anything. And I'm not one to run away from fear, Jerry. I kind of don't do that sort of thing. I have to confront everything. Anyway, within 30 seconds, because I've done a bit of ghost acting, I don't run away from anything, you know. Anyway, so I'm thinking, well, I'm actually starting to panic, because this swing has gone, and I wasn't doing anything at all, just hanging on for dear life. This swing has gone so high up. You know when it goes so high up and then it wants to buckle?
Yes.
And then you kind of go, you defy gravity. It got so high up. And what I've done was I've called all the archangels that I tend to call when there's a situation that needs a bit of help. And nothing happened. So I figured, right, but it's obviously not a situation to be fearful of. So there's got to be something in this. So I thought, right, but I don't want to go over the top. I don't want to land flat on my face.
Right, you don't want to go loop-de-loop.
So it was a dire situation. So I just simply said, and I was frozen stiff on this swing, absolutely frozen, eyes wide open. So I simply said very loudly in my head, stop, like this, stop. And with that, the swing came down like this pendulum, just like a pendulum, and just slowed, right, almost like just stopping. So then obviously I thought, right, okay. says it stops. So therefore, if I say push, it may go again, you see. So I said this again, Mark, push. Off it went again. Did this three times. Well, the point I'm getting to, my answer was then very clear. In that swing, that yes, what the shining monk called the Chi energy is the same force that the Christians call God, that the Muslims call Allah, and it's the same force that feels rejected when we're the conscious human beings say, oh nah, drop all that, you know, don't need any of that, you know, we can do this on our own, we'll be technological whiz kids, you know, we can run the world and all that type of thing, you know what I'm saying? And that's how it feels. And then I figured, right, well, if I can experience this, then so can everybody else. So what I did then was, I would take loads of people down to the local park, because the park swings are much better than household swings, because they're a lot stronger, so you know you're not going to fall off them. And then we kind of get all the kids off the swings, and then all the people would sit on the swings, and I'd say, right, okay, all you've got to do is know you're going to swing. What you have to do is, you have to keep your knees, like, touching, because it's obviously chi energy then runs round, and your ankles touching, and you hold on, like, shoulder height. I can just hold on with two fingers now, but that's when I'm showing off, you know, because sometimes it's a bit of fun just to show off. And you just literally just say push, just push.
And the swing will start?
Yeah, but if you try from your head, then it doesn't go, because you're actually using your head, your ego, or your will, and that kind of prevents this God force creation from actually flowing through you. So I figured if I could get people to do that, then they could actually see and feel this incredible energy that we call God working within them, and then healings and balances would occur, and you know, I just thought it was fantastic. And I found that the ones who could not do it were the ones who had very, very strong belief systems. So whatever belief system it was, you know, whether they were just really highly spiritual, or whether they were, you know, really churchy people, or it was more the skeptics or the open-minded people who weren't scared to be wrong that could actually do it. It was like, well, okay, it might not go, but I don't care. And they were the ones that relaxed more into it. And the first way to do it is, if someone's doing it for the first time, is actually swing yourself the first time. Actually really swing. Give it a good old swing, you know, the way one would. And retain that memory, that feeling within the cells. And then when the swing almost stops, retain that memory and call upon that memory, and then it will start up again.
Well, I'm going to have to try that.
Okay. Try it for a few guys. Don't be disappointed.
Yeah.
Use your head. And when you're halfway up, the exhilaration, it comes out from almost like the stomach area, this exhilaration. And it's like your heart races because you know you're not doing anything.
Mm-hmm.
And you don't understand why it's going. I tell you, it's really good. But just to get people to empower themselves, it's the best. It's the absolute best. You know, and that's why I love working in the clinic. Because I see people go out so empowered, and I just think this is really ace. Yeah, pretty ace.
So basically, we're talking about literally carrying the power of positive thinking to a ninth degree. In other words, if you think you can do it and you relax and let this force take over, you
can do it. You can just do it. It's just incredible. And what people always wonder with me, Jerry, is because I am actually a very ordinary person, you know, and I'm just pretty much me. And people often wonder how I can do the things that I can do. And the only answer I can honestly give them is, and this is just inherent within me, every single day, pretty much every single moment, the whole of creation, the whole of humanity, absolutely everything, never ceases to amaze me whatever it is. It just absolutely amazes me. And I think that sense of wonderment, but without having answers, I think that's what enables me to do what I do. And of course.
So now let me make sure I understand this. God is this force that's everywhere, and angels, archangels, do they exist?
But what they are, the conventional way of thinking of angels is they've got big fluffy wings, which is very nice for us thinking.
Right. And a halo.
Yeah, but actually, and there's such a common sense here, Jerry, because they're energy, because they haven't got a form, okay, because they're energy, they're therefore, and they don't have a form, they are sparks, they don't have a form, therefore, the fluffy wings, the power they emanate does come through as you feel as if you're having these wings around you, which obviously I've experienced that from time to time, which is quite incredible. But what I know, angels are sparks, they're frequencies within this amazing God force. That is particularly the archangels. It's a bit like you've got your radio, which is what frequency it is. So you could say that frequency is, say, Archangel Michael. And then you could get another radio station, which is another frequency. Mm-hmm. Could call that, say, Archangel Uriel. They're different frequencies, so it's being able to tune into the different frequencies. The person's individual angel is a totally different thing, and that's what I'm going to be talking about in San Francisco.
And when you do your talk there, I unfortunately I'm busy that day. I'd love to be up there to hear you and see you.
Oh, I tell you, it's hard. And it's good fun. It's like all the answers that you've been looking for years just kind of really fit into place. And the empowerment that happens with the individual is the same. Yeah.
So the angels, the archangels, and God, they're all in unison? They complement each other? Or are angels and hierarchy part of the...
Well, you have your archangels, which are almost like, in many ways, the consciousness that is the God force, that is this creative force. They kind of direct this and that. They're the archangels, or what we know as archangels. But the person, individual angel, is the consciousness, is the personality that makes up the individual person. So, for example, you're Jerry, okay? So your personality, that is Jerry, is a tiny fragment of your whole angelic self that has been placed into your body, that is sucking life out on this dimension, so that your whole angelic self can grow and expand and move forward through the rest of the universe. Because the whole of creation is about expanding and growth. But you have to kind of have a life here, or a few lives here, depending how many it takes, so that you can understand how this dimension ticks, so you can then report back to your whole angelic self and move on to the next level of...
So basically you're saying that when we die, the reincarnation is there.
Oh, that's how I see it, yes.
Yeah.
From what I've experienced, from what I've experienced.
Well, that leads us to the time travel thing and angle we're going to get to here in just a second. What about time travel? Let's just, of all the things I deal with, this seems to be the most difficult for me to accept.
Okay, well, how it's based on is that, well, it was for me too. But it actually wasn't until I met my editor, who is an astrophysicist, and he's incredibly logical, and everything has to be black and white. And I'd explain to him what actually would happen when I was time traveling, and I'd explain how I'd feel the energy come in to get ready to do, in particular, the birth of Jesus. The first place that I actually time traveled to was the birth of Jesus. I hasten to say, you can't actually choose where you want to go to. You have to just be awake to what's known as wormholes that are scientifically and mathematically proven in the universe. The scientists and the mathematicians know these exist. And they're like spirals. And what happens is, it's almost as if, I'm trying to explain this as easy as possible, as if everything that is that is experienced, then if it's a powerful experience, then enters into like a type of vortex. And these vortexes tend to, whether they float around in the universe or different dimensions, I'm actually unsure of that, and I'm unsure how the human consciousness can access them. But nevertheless, the scientists and the mathematicians do declare they exist. And what happens is when I time travel, I experience this wave of energy coming in, and it swashes me. And it's like, almost like, I'm not thinking of anything, it's like, oh my goodness, I can time travel back to the birth of Jesus, and where did that come from? You know, and it's like, just can't come from nowhere. But that's where being awake comes in. You know, awake.
So when you talk about time travel, you can go forward and backwards both?
Well, it tends to be, I have gone forward just a wee bit, but it tends to be backwards more. I think forward, but I'm kind of at the moment exploring how forward is forward. Am I going forward into what our collective consciousness perceive how our future is actually going to be? Because say for instance, say you and say a number of folks in the state say or believe that in maybe 50 years time there'll be something will happen, just say. That becomes a collective thought form, and that's a valid thought form. So I don't know if I'm travelling into that valid thought form, or is it something that actually is going to happen?
Well, are there different versions? Are there different versions of the past?
I can't say if I've got done. Oh, I've done. Definitely, it's different from what's written. I've done Nelson. That was really fascinating because you know we have Nelson here in the UK. That was quite fascinating. That was. And but it tends to be more. It seems to be. It seems I have the ability to travel more into events that have molded our belief system throughout time. And I think the reason that I can do that is because I think there's a mass call out from humanity that are now saying what did happen. We're kind of a little bit confused. We can't quite see how this could happen. What really did happen? And I do believe that it's because so many folks are questioning historical events that's enabled the pull of these wormholes to come close so that I can then enter them and travel back through these wormholes.
Now, literally, when you enter a wormhole and go to some other time, your body, you're still sitting in a chair wherever you are. This is a mental thing?
Yes. What happens is, I usually sit on the floor. I mean, I get pretty stiff because I'm nearly 50. You know, you're going to get stiff at 50, although it's a cushion. And there's a process I do where I make sure I'm connected to divine will, universal flow, God, force, creation, whatever you call it. You know, I make sure that happens first. And I get this sensation that occurs in my blood and bones. I never ever make sure I'm connected using my head, because the head is where the ego exists, and that will always tell you, yes, you are this, etc., etc. Whereas because the blood and bones are ignorant of ego, they can't lie to you. So I only ever let myself go under when I get this sensation in my blood and bones, and it's a sensation that is familiar with me now. And then what happens is my head by some force gets pulled back and slightly twisted, And then what happens is my will steps out of my body. It kind of slides through, and I guess it slides through my crown center all the way up through. And then it's literally as if some force steps inside and then will spur me right back. Now, when I go back, I really feel as if I'm going faster and faster and faster and faster until I land where I'm meant to land. And it's and obviously I go back as energy force. And because I'm going back as energy force, I'm therefore aware of every single thing that is existing in that time span. So it's not just I'm not just looking at an event. I'm almost become part of that event, where I feel everything that's going on. Does that make any sense?
So you is it like you're a participant, or you're just there watching a movie?
Well, I'm not a participant. I'm there observing, but I'm also part of the energy that's going on at that time. So I'm observing and taking in everything that's going on.
Have you been back to the same place and time more than once?
No, it doesn't ever happen more than once.
Okay, so you don't really know, you can't compare. Like an event you talked about, you were there when Jesus was born, right?
I went back to the birth of Jesus.
Yeah, I mean, did you go to the to the stable? Is that where that happened?
Yeah, it wasn't the stable. The problem is when you go back, you have...
I mean, how do you know this is just not the subconscious upbringing in religion?
Well, when you go back, when I first went back to, this is where social conditioning and religion can become really quite heavy. It can become quite restrictive. And you have to be able to access a freedom within yourself, which is actually obviously the tough part to do, that enables you to see as it's happened, because logically you'd want to contradict everything. I mean, when I first went back, I didn't realise in my breaking ignorance state that from the birth of Jesus, you know, like you do it from childhood, don't you? You do the nativity from childhood. And in my mind, I didn't realise that I thought that the roads in Bethlehem would be like dirt tracks. That's what I actually thought, you see. But when I actually landed back there, They were cobbled. It was actually cobbled pathways, which immediately threw me, because I thought, well, I expected dirt tracks.
Mm-hmm.
That was one contradiction. And the next one was when I saw this tall chap, which was Joseph, and this smaller lady, which was Mary. The first thing I thought was, well, where's the donkey? You know, because, you know, it's like, where's the donkey? I don't know what anybody else was saying, but that's what I thought. I'm like, where's the donkey? And it was almost like this energy that was working inside me was instructing me to let go of everything that I'd read about this most sacred of nights. And I'm thinking, crikey, no donkey, dirt, you know, cobbled streets. And I'm thinking, I've got off at the wrong stop. You know, that's what I was seriously thinking. And then eventually, once I relaxed into it, okay, let's just see this as we're seeing a video film, as opposed to thinking what a load of rubbish, let's just see how the events manifest. And it was really quite incredible.
So what do you think about Jesus? We mentioned the angels and we mentioned God.
Oh my goodness. Well,
I mean, you were there.
I'm actually at the process that we're talking about right now is writing the next book, which is actually on the missing years of Jesus, because for the past 14 years, I've had...
I mean, it just seems to me that our ideas, and you must understand, I was raised in a Protestant church, and everything. So what I'm going to say is not hypocritical, I hope. But what I'm saying is, it seems to me that there's a heavy dose of non-reality to all religion. That it's pretty well been scriptured in a way that would benefit ever who's writing the book. So are you're saying these were real events?
I'm saying what I experienced, and I can only ever report on what I've actually experienced. You know, that's all I can do. But for the past 14 years, I've been in communication with Jesus, where I've been able to time travel back into seeing how he actually lived his life. Whether he had a relationship with Mary Magdalene, whether he had children, how he died, whether he died on the cross.
And you're going to put all this in a book?
I thought this is all going in the book.
Yeah. I mean, you know, this is the hot topic right now.
Yeah, I know. But what I have to do is I have to be very, 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 very respectful, because the last thing I want to do is upset anybody. But at the same time, I don't want to compromise what it is I've experienced. And because I've been in these close communications, it's really important for me to write exactly how I saw it.
I'm not asking you. I'm not asking you to give away your new book. But did you find out that Jesus went to India or to England or?
Yes, he did travel. He traveled a lot. He traveled from the age of around 10 with his uncle Joseph, who was a merchant. And apparently it wasn't unusual for children to do that. And that's when he learned an awful lot of his... He was a great observer. He wasn't someone that would actually... He wasn't a great scholar, but he did like to observe. And he observed many different religions and thought forms, because that helped him understand what made cultures tick, and this really fascinated him. So this is the one part that it was pretty much the best part of his life, was the travels that he did with his uncle, and he had a great bond with his uncle. He went to India, he went to studied a little while in Tibet, albeit a short time, and that's where, and he also spoke Greek. There's a few more, a bit more to be told on that, but that was what he did. But his main message when he first came through was that when he walks on this planet, he walks as brother, he no greater, no lesser. And he was a very ordinary person. He was not aware that he was what people called the Messiah. He was not aware of that. He was quite a feisty character. In his youth, he liked a drop of wine, you know, like most of them did. He was, you know, he had to sow his oats.
Now what happened at the crucifixion? Have you got to that part yet?
Yeah, I've done the crucifixion. Yeah, that was actually quite a painful part, because what happens is when a session occurs, when I hold a session, then people will come to the house, because nobody's doing it. You know, it's good to ask questions. And this is where the many folks come in and they ask questions. And one of the questions was, when he actually died on the cross, they were asking, did he die on the cross, was he saved? I can only say from what I experienced, Jerry, as he most definitely did die on the cross. And one person said to him, were you in pain? There was something on that level, were you in pain? And yes, and I'm doing this from memory, although everything is written down, everything is logged word for word, because I know things do get twisted. But, so I'm doing this from memory at the moment. But when he answered that question, he said that the pain he felt, and because his essence, his spirit is in my body, I also feel his memory and I also feel his spiritual pain. He said his pain was for the immense suffering that mankind is going through because the torment they must be experiencing that makes them do this to another human is just immeasurable. And the pain he felt was the pain that mankind was going through that had reduced mankind to doing this to another one. And it was that pain that he felt for them. And it was, and that really will always stay with me. And someone thanked him for his life and for being the person he was and for everything he was. And he put his hand up to stop those words mid-flow. And his heart, which obviously was in my body at the time, swelled to unbelievable heights with so much love and compassion for mankind that how can anyone thank him? It was like, how can you say thank you for me loving you? You know, it's that when you love someone so much, there are no thanks involved. You know, it was just immense. And that pretty much stays with me.
Now, when we're looking forward to that book when it does come out, let's get into some of these other things. Just one final question about religion and about Jesus here. You believe in reincarnation. What was the message with Jesus there? You know, the Christian belief is you believe upon me, you have everlasting life, et cetera, et cetera. What are we talking about here, really? I mean, what happened to Jesus? Was he resurrected, and did he go to heaven, or did he go back to India? What happened?
He was resurrected, but not in physical form. It was in a spiritual form. You see, what happened was when he had a task, and his task was, which he didn't know at the time, but it wasn't obviously until he died. There are many people who are walking around the planet at the moment who are able to bring different energies into this planet. It's like bringing a new phone line in, if you know what I'm saying. And his task was to ground a wonderful healing energy, a wonderful light into this planet that was at that time full of fear and doom and gloom and control and war, shall we say.
Well, in your travels back through time, and in your journeys into enlightenment, have you run across the evil side, demons?
Now there's another thing. Yes, I have, and I do write that about that in the astral plane. Yes, I have, and how long have you got, Jerry?
So, are there demons within us?
There are, in the universe, you have positive and you have negative. You have balance and imbalance. So you have light and you have dark. The energy is light, the manifestation is dark. So, example, if you have a tree, you look at the tree, that is matter. And so therefore, that is dark. But what makes that tree grow, what makes that tree flourish, is the energy, which is light. Are you with me on that?
Okay.
Now, if there is a gap in the tree's productive system, there is negativity, there is crack, there is imbalance. And that's what people call the evil. There is neither this or the other. It's unprojected energy, which therefore becomes stagnant and will manifest in negative thought forms, as you say, evil demons, and etc.
We're talking with Tanika Renard here, and we have about 10 minutes left or so. Basically, I guess the problem I have with all of this, Tanika, if I have a problem, is it seems to me that the terms I use and you use and all of us use are relative. In other words, evil, what is evil, really? What is good, really?
Yeah. Well, you see,
I mean, I've done many of these shows, as you know, and the catchphrase is negative and positive energy, things like that. Well, I just need a little better definition than that.
Well, I call it balance and imbalance.
Mm-hmm. Well, I mean, well, so imbalance is bad and balance is good.
No, there's balance and imbalance. You see, but the reason why I say balance and imbalance is I avoid the words using good and evil, because I found through all the many channelings that I've done, and I've had something like 600 different entities, different spiritual entities in my body today, and I found that when one uses the word good or evil, then first of all, to use the word evil tends to give that power, so I don't use that. And if you use the word good, the almost because that's a very, it's very subtle, but there's a very slight sense of judgment and being a bit, yeah, okay, I see that going on.
Well, I mean, you talk to certain fundamentalists, and their definition of evil is living life to the fullest, having a little wine, and and that's, to me, is not evil at all.
No, I don't see that.
Maybe evil is lining people up and shooting them.
I see there's an awful lot of imbalance, which people would probably say is evil.
Mm-hmm.
But that's the word they would choose to use. It's the word I don't choose to use. But there is a lot of imbalance. But I don't see as living life to the full as being.
No, I think that's what we're here for. Within reason, I mean, you do have to have judgment. Okay, you're going to give me the ultimate description here, right? Ultimately, about evil and good and living life to the fullest.
When Jesus was in my body, the first time he connected, he put his hand very slow, which was obviously my hand, brought it up to my face, and very slowly touched my cheek, and then very slowly took my hand up to my hair and touched my hair. And as he was doing this, he was remembering what it was to have life. And through that memory, there was such an appreciation for life that I had never, ever, ever experienced. And on one of the sessions that I had with him, when somebody asked him a question, and the question was, you know, your life seems so heavy and hard going, you know, what did you ever do for fun? That was the question. And he answered, he said, have you ever felt the wind in your hair, the stars on your face, breathed in the fresh wind, held a newborn babe, it was a number of things. He said, to me, this was everything. And it was in his answer that I appreciated how wonderful life is. And if we begin focusing on the beauty that we have all around us, and enjoy ourselves, live life to the full because we've got life, and really appreciate it. Obviously, never harm anybody else and never try and dictate to anybody else, and appreciate everybody walks their own path.
Well, I try to follow the karma, the golden rule, whatever you want to call it. I think it's a good way to live. Many people either forget that rule or throw it to the side if they become defensive, and it's too bad in many ways. Let's move along here. Talk about reincarnation, and is there a certain amount of lives we have, and what happens at the end?
Because I've regressed a fair few people, and some people, they've been like, they've regressed way off this planet to another life, that's long before they've ever had life on this planet. And you know, lots of people talk about Atlantis, and they talk about the amazing intelligent beings.
Yes, uh-huh.
Yeah. Well, I think what they're actually doing is, when you regress them back, they're actually regressing back into their spiritual DNA. I call it spiritual DNA, because it doesn't just disappear. You know, everything we learn, we store. So we store it somewhere. So we store it within our spiritual DNA, and they can access that. And so it does seem to me that we kind of have lived through a fair few thousand lives. You know, one or two, three or four, that's nothing. But it's a fair few thousand lives. And I do think when people regress back in their life, Anthony and Cleopatra or, you know, what they're actually doing is they're actually stepping into what I call the universal memory bank to experience that particular life. It doesn't mean they were that life, but they're actually able to experience that particular life as that particular spirit lived it, to learn something that can help them in this life. But it doesn't mean they were actually that person. So it kind of cuts that out.
Well, I kind of agree with that. You kind of manufacture these things. You know, and then what you say is maybe it's a way to get a lesson. So that's a good point. We're talking with Tanika Renard here, a remarkable paranormal person who has unique abilities and has a forthcoming speaking engagement on April 29th in California, in San Francisco. Where exactly is that you'll be speaking?
It's the New Living Expo at the Convention Center in San Francisco.
Okay.
That one?
Yeah, and I used to live in San Francisco, lovely place.
Oh, right, I've never been. I'm looking for...
Oh, well, you need to... Well, it's probably similar to England. You probably better bring you a sweater, even though it's... it has a tendency to get cool overnight and in the morning.
Oh, right, thank you for that advice, Arthur.
Yeah, because you can always tell the tourists, they're the ones in the short-sleeve shirts. Now watch, they're having a heat wave here, so watch when you get there, it'll be really warm. But it's never really warm in San Francisco, but it is a beautiful, beautiful place. If you're going to say you need to commune with God through nature and your surroundings, this is a place to do it. Especially go up to Nob Hill and look down at the bay and North Beach and go over to Golden Gate Bridge. You'll enjoy it. We're almost out of time, but I've got to ask you, you brought up the subject, extraterrestrials, life on other planets. Are we bound to this planet?
Oh my goodness, no. That doesn't mean to say there's lots of little green men flying about, you know, it doesn't mean that. But with the different forms of consciousness that are out there, we can communicate, but it's such a deep, deep process. I once had the honour of doing that, but I had to be taken up to my 33rd energy centre, or chakra, as some people would call it. And that kind of really spaced me out. Whoa! And it was like tuning in to some type of radio, and it was a language that I just could not possibly even comprehend. But that was in the here and now. But I do know that as human form, we are here just for a short time.
I mean, you know, there's thousands of sightings, and lots of people say they have contacts. And what do you make of all that?
I do, yeah, well, I do believe them. I'd say an awful lot of people do have these amazing experiences. I do see that. I've never personally seen a UFO, so I can't say yes or no to that.
Well, I've been doing UFO shows for 4 decades, and I finally saw my first one a couple of years ago in Phoenix while doing a show. But we were doing it out on the Twin Peaks area north of Phoenix and doing a remote, and that show is yet to air, as a matter of fact, but it was quite phenomenal. And we're still working on that show.
I do actually, you know, I'm totally with that higher intelligence or I don't know what to call it, alien, that's almost disrespectful, but yeah, alien intelligence does exist, but on a different frequency to ours, and when our frequency either slows down or heightens up, whichever way, that's obviously when we can see them, and there's certain vortexes which obviously they can come in and people can see them, but I do know that does need any kind of...
Well, Yeah, I appreciate you taking time to talk to me, and I need to explain to you one tack of my questioning here, Tanika Renoir, because you're a good-looking woman, you're intelligent, you have lots of charisma, and when I found out about this time traveling, I thought, well, if she actually can go these places, and I take it that it's in a mental, emotional, interdimensional travel rather than physical. I thought, that'd make a great TV show if we could figure out how to do it, where she could go talk to the historic figures. In other words, what I'm asking you is, can you call up an event and go there at will?
Well, actually, just recently I have been doing that. I went to the Greek island of Kos, which is where Hippocrates, you know Hippocrates, father of medicine? He had the big hospital there. And you know when you get the tour guides that take people around? Well, I'm really fortunate, Jerry, I don't need a tour guide. I just find a quiet spot and I can call upon whatever energy is there to take me back into that spot and I see exactly what happens. And I learn from there, and that is amazing. So pretty much, yes, I can.
Yeah, so when you go back to an historic event that you've read about, and you already mentioned the cobbled streets in Bethlehem got you, I guess there's always something that is not really the way you thought it was.
I tell you what, it's usually only 50% how it was.
Well, that's kind of the way, I hate to knock my friends in the media, and I'm as part of that, but that's kind of the way we report things. It kind of works out that way. I don't think it necessarily a plot. It's just the human condition. When you start describing things, you leave out important things, or you and by the third or fourth time down, the story's embellished.
But when you go back and you actually see how it is, and what happened, it all fits into place. Now I believe that what I can do, eventually everybody else will be able to do it. I do believe that, and maybe that's the 90% of our brain that we're not actually accessing. And I do believe when we can do that, then there won't be a need for wars or misinterpretation. And everything will be harmony because not only do you see the event as it happens, you feel and you experience them as well. So there's no doubt. There's no doubt at all. And you understand everything from every different aspect rather than just, say, one aspect. You understand everything. And I do truly believe that eventually everyone will be able to do that. I don't have any doubt over that.
Well, it's been an exciting hour. Very interesting. I'm sure we'll meet again sometime.
Well, it's lovely talking to you, Jerry. Bit of a flirt there, boy.
Oh, you noticed that.
Doing my ego good here.
We'll be in contact with you, Sabor. You have fun in San Francisco, and your husband is a very good PR person. He's quite the agent, and it does take a team. I have four or five people who work with me, and one person can't do it all. Not in today's multimedia world, for sure.
Well, I'll give him a good dinner tonight.
Okay, and you have fun in San Francisco, and we'll be touching base with you, and one of these days maybe we'll meet in person.
Be great. Thank you so much.
Okay, bye-bye.